Ladies and gentlemen, sports fans alike, welcome to another edition of Bill Swirsky, Sports Talk Chicago, one of the couple, two, three best podcasts around. So sit back, grab yourself a cold one and a Polish sausage, park your keister in the French room, and listen to Bill Swirsky, Sports Talk Chicago.
In Chicago, you know that all sports rock. The Bears, Hawks, Bulls, Cubs, and Sox. Pick your favorite, you can choose, as long as the Packers lose. For everything you need to know, it's Bill Swirsky, Sports Talk Chicago. Bill Swirsky, Sports Talk Chicago.
Hey everybody, welcome to another edition of Bill Swirsky Sports Talk Chicago. This is your hosts, Alex and Sean. On this episode, we are just days away from the MLB trade deadline. We'll be talking Cubs, Sox, Bears training camp opened up. We'll be talking about that, maybe talk a little hockey. But first, I'd like to thank our sponsor, the Rockford IceHogs. If you're not familiar with the Rockford IceHogs, they're the AHL minor league affiliate of the Chicago Blackhawks. What does that mean for you? You get to see the stars of tomorrow today at family-friendly, affordable prices. Sure, the season's not going on right now, but that shouldn't stop you from heading on over to icehogs.com, get yourself a hat, shirt, jersey, tickets, and more. Tell them Swirsky Sports sent you. Alex, how has your time off been? We took a week off. How has it been?
Oh, it's been good. Just, you know, working and enjoying some of the nice weather. Counting down the days, as you said, to the trade deadline, you know, very bittersweet, obviously. I mean, other than that, no complaints here, really.
You know, it's funny. Last year at this time, I wasn't anxious. I was just kind of, you know, I'd resigned myself like, hey, there's going to be a clean sweep of the, you know, the big names, the Bryants, the Rizzos, the Baezes. And I'm just curious of where they're going and what the return is going to be. At this point right now, I'm nervous. I don't think I want Wilson Contreras gone, and I definitely don't want Ian Happ gone.
And I'm the same way. And here's the thing that makes you so anxious. There's a couple of reasons. First of all, in terms of just the Cubs and the guys that they're probably going to trade, Contreras, Happ, Robertson, you really need to nail these. And look, last year, Chris Bryant got you Caleb Killian and Alexander Canario. Alexander Canario has been on a tear in the minor league system. You got Pete Crow Armstrong for Javier Baez, and Pete Crow Armstrong is now a top 100. And then with Anthony Rizzo, you have Kevin Alcantara.
And Pete Crow Armstrong is arguably your number one prospect in your farm system.
Considering Davis has been hurt, yeah, I would say so. I mean, he's definitely the one that's been talked about the most, the one that's getting the most attention. You know, obviously keep a lookout for some of the others too. But, you know, you did good. But what you got at the time, nobody knew who Pete Crow Armstrong was. We didn't know who Caleb Killian was. We didn't know Alexander Canario. You know, we didn't know who any of those guys were. And now you feel like there's a lot of pressure because not only do you want to trade for the right guys for the future, you want to start getting some guys that can make an impact sooner rather than later. We're not talking about more 18, 19-year-old prospects that are more of a mystery, that are more raw. You want to bring in some established prospects, guys that you could be looking at a timeline of maybe even next year. Because if you're parting with Wilson Contreras and Ian Happ, you know, that's two guys that could have been potentially around next year that now won't be, unless you sign Wilson Contreras, but Ian Happ's got a year of control. So, I mean, you got to really nail these trades if you want to get back to being good anytime soon.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, we've talked about how the farm system right now is built differently than it was when the Cubs got good and ended up winning the World Series.
Under Epstein, right.
Yes, because there was a crop that came up roughly the same time. Within like a two-year span, you had everybody up. And
they had pedigrees.
Yeah, but right now, you've got guys that you're excited about, but they're young. It is early. I mean, Pete Crow Armstrong, we talk about him, how exciting he has been since he joined the Cubs farm system. And he's a, you know, a couple of years away still.
Right. And I mean, especially with a guy like Christian Hernandez, obviously you signed him as a free agent, as an international free agent. A lot of those guys are a ways away. I think the other thing too, is that as high as I've been on this farm system, we talked about it on this show before.
Yeah.
You know, you don't have that Chris Bryant. And what I mean by that is the guy with the ceiling that is higher than the universe, the guy that you look at and say, that's going to be your MVP. You like Pete Crow Armstrong. You like Kevin Alcantara. I think people still like Brennan Davis. You know, remember, but people were very high on him going into this year before he got hurt.
And I was going to say, Brennan Davis was that guy until he got hurt.
And even when he was that top guy, I don't think anyone was as high on him, even in his hype, than Chris Bryant.
So, but the way this farm system is built is there, it is wildly staggered. You have guys like Brennan Davis, who, had there not been an injury, very likely would have been on this roster sometime in the second half of the season after the trade deadline. And then you've got guys that are 3-4 years away from being ready. So it is a widespread. So,
which isn't necessarily a bad thing.
No, it's not a bad thing. It's good from a financial planning perspective, but it's also good for, you know, I mean, the Dodgers, that's what the Dodgers have. They just have a constant influx of young talent.
It's unbelievable.
But, you know, the hard part is you're going to have to get ownership to pony up to pay for major league talent to fill in the gaps until you have, you know, that steady stream. Because here's the thing is, you know, with your roster is you need guys you can, you know, if you want to take this truly a long time and build through the draft and acquisitions and signing guys to 1-year deals and then flipping them at the deadline and replenishing the farm system like that, it's going to take forever. And just eventually you're going to have to pony up some money for free agents. But, you know, this organization needs to put money in to have some sort of framework to build off of for this minor league talent to be successful.
Absolutely. I think that in this case going forward, you know, obviously when you won the World Series and you built that run, you gave money to John Lester, you gave money to Ben Zobrist, you gave money to Jason Hayward. So yeah, you spent money to put the team together. But I do think that in this next phase, this next hopeful contention era of Cubs baseball, you might have to rely a bit more on bringing in outside guys instead of just saying, here is our core. We are growing this entire core, so to speak. Because you traded for Anthony Rizzo, but you helped him kind of, you know, find his way and then bring him up. Because when you traded him, he had a little of time in the Padres system, but he was still very young and raw.
He was a change of scenery guy a little bit.
Yeah, exactly. And then you drafted Chris Bryant. You drafted Kyle Schwarber. You drafted Javier Baez. You signed Wilson Contreras back in, what, 08, 09? So you developed him. I mean, that whole core really was the position core, that is, was developed. And the pitching core was not, quite the opposite. That you all went out and got. You know, you could almost kind of see an opposite dynamic going forward. I think the goal might be to have more of the homegrown pitching, but more of the outside position, if that makes sense.
Yes. But I mean, you know, honestly, even signing a frontline pitcher, like, isn't DeGrom opting out of his contract? I believe they said, I read today. So you would have, you know, let's say a Jacob DeGrom, and then you sign a guy like Carlos Correa or Aaron Judge, like a true superstar caliber player. That is a nice start to add. But the secondary part of that is you had better get hauls for the guys you're trading away.
Yeah.
Because otherwise you are really starting from scratch, and, you know, signing those big free agents is all for naught, because you're not going to win with two superstar players.
Yeah. And I mean, look, with Wilson Contreras, my dream, and I'm not counting on this happening because it does happen, but not very often. My dream would just get a haul for him at the deadline and then re-sign him in the offseason. I mean, that would just be the ultimate dream. I mean, we dreamed about that with pretty much all the core guys. We knew it wasn't going to happen with Bryant, but with Baez and Rizzo, I thought, one of those guys might stay. It obviously didn't happen. I think that bridges were burned between Rizzo and the Cubs. And I think Baez, this is my opinion, this is my theory. I don't know if it's true or not, but I've always been of the belief that the Cubs were, and this doesn't mean to sound in a bad way, like it's nothing personal or anything, but you probably sense where I'm going with this. I think the Cubs were ready to move on from Baez. I think they saw, you know what, this guy gave us his peak performance from 2016 through 2019. You know, we're trying to move forward with a different philosophy. You know, he's a productive guy. He does great things, but, you know, we want some more contact-oriented guys in the middle. We believe in Nico Horner. So I think Baez not coming back, I don't think that the interest in bringing back Baez was really there by the Cubs. That's my opinion.
I think Theo was much higher on him than Jed.
Could be.
And I don't discount anything you said, but I think part of that is that I don't think Jed Hoyer was nearly as high on him. And because when we heard rumors of contract extensions and things, was still when Theo was here.
It's a good point.
Jed gets in and nope, he's gone. And I think that was the right call. Is of all those guys, Javi Baez is an exciting baseball player. Javi Baez shined bright in the bright lights, but the guy has a giant hole in his swing and he relies a lot on bat speed, and that bat speed doesn't age well.
And you have your replacement already there proving it in Nico Horner.
Right. And it's a different, you know, Nico Horner's a different baseball player, but I think he's more what the Cubs were looking for.
Well, yeah. I mean, you have a slugger in Javier Baez with strikeouts and holes in the swing. With Nico, you have the guy that just hits line drives and makes contact. They're polar opposites. But frankly, I think Nico's kind of been a breath of fresh air. I mean, what Nico is doing is what I kind of hoped we would have seen from Nick Madrigal. And I think we're kind of at the point where Nick Madrigal might just be working his way out of the organization because of what Christopher Morel has shown. There's other guys in the farm system at second base. Is Nick Madrigal going to be here for the long run? I honestly don't know. I mean, it wasn't really that he was just struggling when he did play. He had a long-term injury last year, and then he's come back and he's already been on the IL twice for an extended period of time.
Yeah. I don't even know where they're at with him. I don't even know what's going on.
He's doing rehab right now. He's actually hitting pretty well. And part of me would honestly just kind of thinks, you know what, just keep him down in the minors for a little while longer. You know, this is probably a hindsight opinion, but I think one could argue that when Nick Madrigal worked his way back with the Cubs this offseason, I would have been tempted to be like, you know what, let's have him start the year in AAA, really work himself back, and then maybe May will call him up. Obviously, that's a very hindsight way of looking at things. He had already played in the majors with the White Sox. It probably wasn't that logical to look at it that way. You wanted to get him playing as soon as possible. But, you know, you look back at it and, you know, he's got options. His sample size in the big leagues is not very long. When you think about it, it is really not very long. And, you know, if you think you have something in the future, you know, there's no real rush for him is what I'm trying to say. And you know what? If it doesn't work out, you might just have to take an L on that one and move on.
Right. And, you know, is it the biggest L in the world? No. You traded Craig Kimbrel.
Yeah, and you could still get some good out of Cody Hoyer in the second half next year. I mean, you know, he comes back from surgery and, you know, this is the modern world. We see pitchers come back stronger from Tommy John surgery. It's not the death sentence it once was. So, you know, if Cody Hoyer works out, then, you know, okay. I mean, Craig Kimbrel was traded because he was good for the Cubs for what, 4 months?
Mm-hmm.
And he was on the last year of his guaranteed money, I believe, because I think there was a player option in there. I believe it was either a team option or a player option. There was an option in there, but you know, it sounded like that was the most enticing offer for Jed. And it also sounds like he wanted to get a deal where he wanted, you know, he knew he was going to be trading the core for prospects. I can't blame him for wanting to go out and get major league ready young guys. I really can't. Would Nick Madrigal have been my first choice? No, but you know, some people are really, really ticked about that trade. And, you know, I get it, the whole Eloy Quintana thing, but honestly, in my opinion is if it doesn't work out, it's not like Craig Kimbrel was your all-star closer for like 3 years. You know, it was like, you got four really good months out of him. You know, it's just whatever.
I'm quickly looking. Do you want to take a wild guess what Javi Baez slash line is right now?
I'm going to guess 216, 281, 400.
Not too far off. 220, 263, 371.
Okay.
And strikeouts are actually down. Less than 25% strikeout rate.
Yes, I have heard about that. But kind of makes you wonder that maybe they're trying to tinker with him in Detroit and strike out less and the production's going down.
Yeah, I mean, 9 home runs in 88 games.
And think about this, too. When was Javier Baez at his very best? When he was under Joe Madden.
True.
And what was Joe Madden's philosophy with Javier Baez? Let Javi be Javi.
Mm-hmm.
What happened when David Ross came in? The production slipped.
Truth.
Is it directly correlated? I don't know. Do we think that it's something to think about? I think so.
Yeah. Either way, I'm glad we're not paying him boatloads of money.
Yeah. I mean, I'll always love the guy, but I don't sit back and regret not bringing him back. Frankly, the only one I wouldn't mind having around right now is Anthony Rizzo. I mean, first base is kind of a black hole right now. Yes. You know, Schwindel has struggled a bit. Rivas really struggled and he's going back down. You know, maybe PJ Higgins will play a little bit here. But I mean, Chris Bryant's hurt again. He's got plantar fasciitis.
And as somebody that has that, it sucks.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Remember when Joakim Noah had it?
Yeah. And I believe that cost most of a season with Peyton Manning.
Yeah. Yeah. Plantar fasciitis from, you know, my dad had it and everything he's told me and others have told me that I've had it, that it just, there are days it just throbs like no other.
Yep.
So do you want to pay $8 million? Or 8 years of whatever he's making. I'm good.
I was on Twitter today. And, you know, Twitter, you know, you just get like things may not be in order on the way they show up in your timeline.
Mm-hmm.
But this struck a nerve with me. These were two back-to-back tweets like of news from news sources. First one was Cubs and San Francisco Giants are discussing a trade in which infielder Dixon Machado, 796 OPS at AAA Iowa, would end up in San Francisco. The next one, Aaron Judge has hit another home run.
Yeah.
And I'm just like, we are sitting here nickel and diming over a 30-year-old AAA player, Dixon Machado, and the Yankees are like, oh, hey, our guy just broke the record for most home runs through July in Major League history. And that's just frustrating. Is why can't we have nice things? I mean, look at the Padres. The San Diego sports market is very small. It's a city that people move to, and people from there, you know, if they're going to move up, they're moving up to LA, and other people are moving there from other places. It is not a giant sports market. They have the Padres, but it's not really. They lost the Chargers. So they're really not a huge sports city, and they're carrying how many giant contracts? They've got Yu Darvish, they've got Manny Machado, they've got Eric Hosmer, they've got a lot of big contracts, and they're just like, we're all in on bringing other people in, and their farm system is still good. It sucks. Why can't the Cubs be in that type of situation? We're a giant market. And hopefully the Ricketts family realizes how much money it's costing them having a bad product, because we will never know the actual ratings, but I just read a report that the Cubs television ratings this year have been dismal.
They're definitely down, and not surprising.
I mean, between cord cutting and the bad product on the field, you know, that's what they're getting.
Yep. And as we talk about that, San Francisco rallies for four runs here against the Cubs. So this game's over. Not that it matters. Well, you know what, Sean, you mentioned the Aaron Judge home runs. We had something like that once. Late 90s, early 2000s. Long ago.
I remember. But, you know, you mentioned before the dream would be trading away Wilson Contreras and then re-signing him in free agency. He scrubbed all mention of the Cubs from his social media.
He brought it back.
Did he?
He did. That's okay. Like an hour.
I wonder if there's, I mean, here, I don't know. I don't know how these things work, but if I'm Jed Hoyer, like, aren't you talking to him regularly and saying, hey, listen, this is our plan. And so they're aware. I mean, because when the players talk, they're like, I have no idea. We're the last to know. And that's gotta be tough. Like, I realize you can't give them all the insight of what's going on, but don't you at least just talk to them and be like, hey, here's the situation. We're trying to rebuild this farm system. We're trying to rebuild from scratch. And, you know, we're going to try to move you to get talent. We do want to bring you back. Here's a contract type offer. Like, why aren't there those talks? Why aren't they more open? Doesn't that like give a bad taste in your mouth? If nobody's talking to you, there's no contract extension talks, and you just keep reading months and months and months of, you know, you're going to be traded.
I just wonder, are we going to have the money? I don't know. Is it Tom Ricketts' bullshit where they can't commit to extensions because the large market Chicago Cubs are pressed for cash?
they can't be pressed for cash. They can't.
No, of course they're not. Of course they're not actually pressed for cash. That's the thing about all that. People ask, well, why can't they? They can. They just don't want to. That's simple.
It's just infuriating. And, you know, to me, losing Wilson Contreras and Ian Happ just really signals that this is a really, really long-term rebuild. If they keep those guys, I don't know, to me, it says, listen, this is a rebuild, but I think we're closer than maybe we thought we were. And it's between having an absolute tear down rebuild where I don't even think we're done tearing down and it's already dismal with the Blackhawks. I just don't know if I can stomach it with the Cubs at the same time.
Well, at least I can say that the Cubs, even if they trade away these guys, are still probably on a much, much better path than the Blackhawks are going to be in terms of getting good within a semi-reasonable time.
I mean, at least
the Blackhawks aren't going to be anything for at least 5 years.
I mean, there's hope. It's very, very slim hope. It's do Taves and Kane waive their no movement clauses? And obviously you can get something for Taves. I mean, sorry, for Kane. Maybe you can get something for Taves if you eat most of his salary, but then you can use the money that you had for Kane and take on a bad contract to get draft picks. And you win the lottery and you get Connor Bedard and suddenly you're like, okay, now we have financial flexibility and we have this generational superstar. You know, we can rebuild, but
that's a lot of ifs.
It is a lot of ifs. And I don't know what else to hang my hat on. Like that's it.
Yeah.
It really is.
It's bleak. The one last thing I'm going to say for the trade deadline for a Cubs perspective, I have that gut feeling that Juan Soto is going to be a Cardinal.
Oh my God.
I'm expecting it at this point.
Yes, it's just inevitable.
The stars have all aligned. They have the prospects. Bill DeWitt was yucking it up with Mike Rizzo this weekend. Juan Soto loves Albert Pujols. The Cardinals just know how to trade for guys with giving up way less than anticipated, whether it's Goldschmidt or Arenado. I'd be shocked if it didn't happen.
Yeah.
That's why best case scenario is San Diego gets him. If the Dodgers get him, then it's game over for the next 5 years. Well, 2.5, but.
I'm just hoping he either stays in, like they don't trade him and they try to extend him, or San Diego. I can't stomach the Dodgers. I really can't stomach the Cardinals.
I mean, you know, it's like this whole situation. He might not get traded. Maybe, we don't know. But I feel like if you've come this far in these trade talks, it almost feels like a deal's going to happen, right? Like you're going to have all these trade talks and for it not to happen, it's very possible, but how does that look for you as an organization if you're the Nationals, that your generational superstar has been on the trading block, who's still under 2.5 years of control, and you're trying to deal him. Oh, nope, you're not going anywhere. You're going to still play with us even though we tried to trade you.
I mean, they've handled this so dumb. I mean, leaking what the contract that he turned down was, and
that's just petty.
It's petty, but the way they kind of spun it is, oh my God, he turned down $440 million. Figure that out per year. He's super young. He is future you know, current and future star of this league, and you're trying to make him like the 15th highest paid player this year for a 15-year deal. By the end of that deal, he's going to be so grossly underpaid.
And you still have 2.5 years left. I get you're rebuilding, and I get you want more assets. I get that. You're not exactly going to be turning this around right away. But I don't know. I wouldn't be so ready to trade away a guy, even where you are, of his caliber, when it's not like his contract is up next year or this year, but you know, that's just me.
Yeah. So I'm going to throw out some names here. We've already had one trade. The Cubs traded Chris Martin to the Dodgers for Zach McKinstry, who is a top 20 prospect in the Dodgers organization, which actually says quite a bit because they have a pretty damn good farm system. But he's a lefty, which the Cubs desperately needed. He's tearing it up this year in AAA, slashing .335, .417, .487. And he's under team control through 2027. So, and he plays both corner outfield spots and plays second, short, and third. So he's got versatility. And looks like they're just going to put him right on the active roster because they sent down Rivas. So it looks like they're probably going to bring him right on the active roster and give him a shot. And with the Dodgers, he was blocked. They have other prospects and other players. And Chris Martin, I mean, he's not a long-term building block for the Cubs. It is going to suck because we're going from Chris Martin to his likely replacement in the roster is Mark Leiter.
Yeah.
Which is just miserable thinking about. But so, and then, you know, the other trade, they traded Dixon Machado for, I don't know, they traded a bag of balls for a bag of balls.
Hey, they got a player in return. Like, that's for Dixon Machado. When they saw they were trading him, I'm like, it's going to be like cash considerations or something. But that's impressive to get a player back for him. Like, honestly, like, I can't complain about either trades. Even if these guys don't end up being anything, the fact that you got two actual players back that may or may not be part of your future for what you traded, I'll take it.
Yeah, I mean, it honestly sounds like the Cubs did the Giants a solid by trading them a player that could come in and play because they didn't have anybody. Been nice if they could have dealt him Andrelton Simmons.
Yeah, right. A little sweetener.
I'm going to throw some names out here, and you tell me if they'll be a Cub on Wednesday.
Okay.
Marcus Stroman.
Yes.
Wade Miley.
I want to say no, but he's also been hurt. So I'm going to take a wild one and say yes on that one.
Daniel Norris.
No. I thought he was DFA'd.
Did they?
I thought it was gone.
Maybe. Ian Happ.
Gone.
Givens.
Gone. He'll be on the south side.
Wilson Contreras.
Gone.
David Robertson.
Gone.
Drew Smiley.
Gone.
Kyle Hendricks.
He'll be here.
Andrelton Simmons.
No one's going to want him. No one's going to want him. They'll literally place him like outside by the tchotchkes at Gallagher Way and says free. I mean, you want to talk about washed.
He's not even in a box. He's just holding up the sign saying, please take me home for free.
Dude was a legitimate ball player for a long time, but he's pretty much washed at this point.
Yeah. But the Cubs are tough to watch.
I mean, at least so far in the second half, they've been entertaining.
I mean, it's been this Giants series. It seems like it's Patrick Wisdom keeping them in the series.
It has. But it could look uglier for a bit right after the trade deadline. But as we get into late August and September, I think we're going to have that chance to see a bit more of the young guys come up and see what they can do. I think this year you're going to see more potential depth pieces in your organization play. Whereas last year you brought up Frank Schwindel. You had no idea who he was. He played great, but you know, he wasn't like a prospect. You know, you saw a lot of Rafael Ortega. You saw, who else did we see in the second half? Oh, you brought in Trace Thompson. If you remember that.
Oh, I totally forgot about that.
And now he's killing it with the Dodgers. So,
I mean, that it'll be nice to see young players, but I mean, honestly, what do we expect? You know, it's, we're going to see the worst of them. Like, you know, the first coming up, maybe somebody.
If he plays well, continues, maybe you see a little Canario late.
Maybe
he's on the 40-man roster.
Possibly. I don't know. We'll see. I'm just not hopeful. I mean, it'll be nice to be able to watch guys that we're excited about for the future, but I'm just not hopeful. Even if they're going to be good in the long term, I'm just not hopeful to see them be big time contributors in the short time left of the season.
Right.
Like when I say that we're seeing the worst of them, it's the first time guys get called up. Most of the time it's a rough go.
Right.
Seeing major league pitchers consistently. I don't know. After this week, Cubs are going to be a tough watch for a while.
Yep.
Now on the other side of town, I don't even know what to say about them.
They're the most frustrating team that's only two games out we've seen in a while.
So I was watching a clip of the Mariners just celebrating and winning. And I was like, this is what I expected the White Sox to be this year. Like,
is that fun they're having? I'm Tony La Russa. How dare they?
You want to talk about fun? Wake up behind the wheel of your car and don't know how you got there.
God. Dude, I got to say this. When you listen to his post-game press conferences, I don't know what the hell he's saying. Like, it's mumbling. It's literally just mumbling.
I want him and Ozzie Guillen to argue and just listen.
I'm a Hall of Fame baseball person. How dare you?
Like, Ozzie gets going so fast that I don't know what he's saying. And La Russa's just drunk mumbling. And it's going to be me frantically looking back and forth between the two of them, not knowing what's going on. It's like watching Telemundo,
but being equally entertained.
Yes. It's like watching sports in another language. I'm like, what is going on? I sort of can figure this out by context, but I don't understand what anybody's saying.
Yeah. And it's just this goes back to the whole team. Like, when you look at things on the very surface, you're right on the edge of the lead of the AL Central. You just won a series at home. Like, you played pretty, I think you're pretty much at 500 since the second half. So it's like, you're not playing the worst and you're not playing outstanding. And you're seeing a lot of the same issues that you've seen all year. But you can get away with more of that because you're playing the A's and you're going to be playing the Royals and you played the Rockies. And in some of those games, you did just what you needed to do to win. And wins are really what matter at this point. But you've also, you know, the loss in Colorado was ugly. The loss in game one against the A's was very lucky. They launched the ball. An A's team that I looked at, I'm like, who the fuck are these guys? I know they were bombing pitches off Lance Lynn. Like, who are these guys?
This morning, before today's game, they were 100 games exactly into the season. And they were 50-50. And they were 3 games out of first and 3.5 games out of the wild card, where they would have to not only leapfrog the teams that are in the wild card, but also leapfrog Cleveland and Baltimore.
Baltimore,
who's actually playing pretty well.
Right.
And you were going into today's game, you were an even 50, playing 500 baseball out of the All-Star game against Cleveland, Colorado, and Oakland. Now, assuming that you have to win at least 86 games to win this division, and after today's win, the White Sox have to go 35-26 the rest of the way to get there.
I mean,
and that's not impossible.
It's very doable,
but they haven't shown that they can. I mean, that's 9 games above 500. They haven't been that. They've never been close to that. And this next stretch of games is going to determine if they have any shot, because they've got 3 against a terrible Kansas City team, 4 against a bad Texas team, 4 more against a terrible Kansas City team, and then 3 against a bad Detroit team. That's 14 straight games versus bad teams. And if you can't come out of that with a pretty darn good record, then
you don't deserve it.
Then you don't deserve it, and you're probably not going to get it.
The White Sox have been dealt 2 major gifts. Gift number 1, you play in the AL Central. This division is disgustingly terrible.
Right, because if you don't win the division, you are not making the playoffs.
Right, exactly. Number 2, your schedule is as favorable as it gets. You cannot ask for 2 bigger breaks. And all you have to do is take advantage of it. And if you can't even do that, then you don't deserve to go to the playoffs. It's that simple. I still believe the Sox are winning the division. I still believe that when it's all said and done, they'll be at the top. I've been saying this all year long. I've been saying this team is too talented. This team is too talented. This team is too talented. But, you know, after a month or two, we weren't worried. After 3 months, we were starting to go, eh. And now we're a little worried. Now, we were always a little worried about going into this season, about some of the holes that they might have neglected to fix. But we didn't think there was going to be any chance that they couldn't win this god-awful division, right? Like, we felt like, okay, they're going to have to win the division and then figure it out from there. It's not a bold, it's not a great strategy, but even with some of the ignored things, I think we can all agree, we all said, this team's going to win the division. And now there's a chance that they might not. Again, I think the Twins are shit, and I don't think Cleveland's good enough. If Aloy continues to swing a hot bat, Abreu's one of the best hitters in baseball. If you get that, you very well can overtake it, but you got to do it. Time's ticking. We're in August now.
Yeah, I mean, here's the problem is that the manager keeps putting Lyra Garcia into critical spots and starting in games. And Lyra Garcia is batting .208 and his OPS is .507.
OPS? Oh, I don't. What is that? I only care about batting average, RBIs, and home runs. That's how I became a baseball manager.
You've got OPS that up your ass. Let me ask you a question.
Why does he sound, wait, why does he sound like a spaghetti Western? I didn't mean to do that kind of voice. I mean, this doesn't sound like Tony La Russa. It's just the generic old man that I'm putting into Tony La Russa. It's really more like,
Lurie's, it's pretty good against righties that have the last name of Johnson. I looked it up myself. We're using stats, you see.
But the problem is all right, you know, Lurie's terrible and you keep using him, but Moncada is awful too.
And you thought, I mean, there was a stretch where it looked like Moncada was breaking out of it, and then he's kind of gone back into slumping again. And that doesn't help you at all.
Nope. And Grandal is still not good. I mean, Grandal's got an OPS barely above Fleury Garcia. So really, and Tim Anderson doesn't hit for power at all. I mean, he's great at...
it's a great hitter. He just doesn't drive the ball,
you know, and which is fine for you get on base. But the fact that they keep putting guys like Moncada and Lurie Garcia and Grandal at the top of the order, then it's pointless because Tim Anderson gets on base and you're not bringing him home. Abreu's having another great season. Vaughn having a great season. Eloy swinging a hot bat. So it's, you've got to put the hot bats and the good hitters at the top of the order to maximize scoring runs. And the lineup is so poorly constructed. And this is a flawed team to begin with, the way it was built. And you add in a flawed manager, and it's really tough to see them, or, you know, to envision them really going on a run.
Oh, how dare you? Oh, I'm going to kick your ass.
I know. And then Steve Stone will probably talk shit. Well, I'd love it or leave it.
I have a big question that I think needs to be answered. What the hell is wrong with Luis Robert?
I don't know. I was literally
going to ask you. They're not saying much, and that is a tad concerning. Here's the thing. He came out with dizziness right before the All-Star break in the series against the Twins. He didn't play for the rest of the series. He's still out when the second half resumes. And then he's going to a rehab assignment, and now he's not feeling good again. He's not playing again. This is just very odd to me.
Yeah.
Like, and is there something bigger that's going on health-wise?
It's a little nerve-wracking.
Because you need him. You need him.
Absolutely.
If you want to make that postseason run and make have a shot at a World Series.
I mean, the fact that they just, like, if it was something like, yeah, hey, listen, he's got migraines and it's causing him problems right now. Like, okay, say that. But when they're so secretive and vague about things and just a little lightheadedness, a little dizzy, like, okay, maybe got a little.
Is it vertigo?
Yeah. Uh-huh. At first you're like, okay. And, you know, maybe you got a little food poisoning. Maybe it's COVID. Maybe, you know, things that you're like, I'm not worried about. And then suddenly it's been to the point now where you're like, okay, when are we going to see this guy again?
Yeah, it's very strange. And that's really important for him to have. I mean, you know, you can look at the situation right now and you say, hey, you were so banged up through much of the season. Well, right now you have most of the guys that were hurt back, except one of your most important players. You got Grandal back. You got Moncada back. You got Lance Lynn back. And despite the performances, you got the back. So you're much healthier on paper now than you were a little while ago when Aloy was also hurt as well. But Luis Robert's not there. And that's one of your absolute key guys.
I'm seeing tweets that say that he was in the White Sox clubhouse post game today.
Maybe that's a good sign.
I'm hoping.
I don't know. It's who knows? It's so bizarre. We're going to see what happens in this Royals series. Is he going to play tomorrow? Is he going to play the next day? Are they expecting him to play? It's like time will tell. And even if it's just the Royals, you want that bat in there. If he plays against the Royals and mashes against them, you're going to win those games and you're going to have that chance to take over the AL Central.
I'm seeing all these tweets about the White Sox are in talks with the Cubs about Givens. And, yep. And people are just like, welcome to the Cubs, Luis Robert.
Yeah.
That would ensure that he's really got health issues.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, hey, that was kind of predictable. I mean, I know the deal's not done yet, but I even wrote about for Cubby's Crib. I'm like, you know, Givens would probably be a match for the White Sox because we know Rick Hahn loves his bullpen arms. He loves acquiring bullpen arms. And then it begs you the question, what are the White Sox going to do as a whole?
I bet very little. And that this might be their lone move.
Maybe, I don't know if that's going to be their lone move.
What moves do you realistically anticipate them making?
I mean, listen, if he was healthy and if the Giants are indeed selling, I think Jock Peterson would be the perfect move for them. I know he just got hurt, but I feel like Jock Peterson would be the affordable piece you can get that won't cost you a lot. I mean, listen, I'm not expecting them to make any huge moves. I think they'll make some smaller moves, but I don't think they'll just make one or two. It might be a series of a few. I mean, they were in talks with David Peralta, or they were interested in David Peralta. He ended up going to Tampa. That would have been a decent fit there. I bet Rick Hahn just goes after some Michael Givens type bullpen moves and maybe gets another bat that's not too expensive.
It's going to be minor moves. There's not going to be any big time move. I don't think they'll get Jock Peterson. I'm hearing he's going to potentially go back to Atlanta.
Yeah. I mean, hey, they did it last year and it worked out well for them.
Yeah. So that's the rumors I'm hearing, but I just don't know. I mean, the White Sox need help. And it'd be nice if they brought somebody in that got hot at the right time, you know, which would be the next 14 games against bad teams. You know, if the White Sox go 10-4 in those games, suddenly they're probably in the division lead.
You're probably in first.
And you've got a good chance of making the playoffs at that point. But I forgot that the new playoff format will be here this year. So you're going to have three wildcard teams.
Yes, you will.
So right now, if the playoffs were to start today, the Yankees and the Astros would have first round byes. The Twins would be playing the Rays and the Blue Jays would be playing the Mariners in best of three series.
And hey, the Mariners are going for it. Good for them.
Good for them. Yeah. I mean, they look like a lock to make the playoffs. Barring just a complete meltdown. And they picked up a solid pitcher. You know, I'm just, everyone keeps talking about this being a seller's market. And with Castillo gone and Benintendi already moved, Wilson Contreras is probably the number one trade target, right? The best trade target.
On the Cubs?
No, period.
Over Juan Soto?
I'm not considering it. I'm not convinced he's going yet.
Okay, fair enough.
I'm gonna put him in the asterisk column because I still don't. I think they're stupid if they trade him, and I think they might wake up one day and be like, "Oh yeah, that we are so stupid if we do this."
Maybe. I mean, if you're gonna talk position player wise, yeah, he's definitely up there.
I mean, my other big name would be Benintendi, and he's already gone. So, mm-hmm. I mean, the Cubs just seem like they should be able to get a haul for Wilson Contreras.
And they're not budging like to the Mets who are trying to lowball them.
I mean, the Mets are probably trying to give me a mulligan because they're like, we gave you P. Crow Armstrong and we got no results from Javi Baez. Mulligan. And no, Cubs should hold strong on this. How would you feel if Contreras got traded and they kept Tap?
Fine. I don't want it. It's not that I'd be happy, but I wouldn't feel as down.
I could live with it.
It also depends on what Happ brings back or what Wilson Contreras brings back.
Facts. But yeah, Chicago is going to be an interesting place for the next couple of days.
It's going to happen when I'm in the office.
But we do have Bears training camp opened.
Oh, man, the Kool-Aid's out. Clink, clink, clink all over the place.
I am chugging Kool-Aid. Oh, my God. I look like the Joker because I've got the red all over on my face. I am just chugging Kool-Aid. I got a tummy ache and... You know, my wooden spoon is stained right now. I can't keep ice in the tray frozen because I'm making so much Kool-Aid.
I'm gonna get diabetes because of all the sugar.
I'm just mainlining Kool-Aid.
You're just chugging.
I've got a Kool-Aid IV.
It's funny. I actually made some Kool-Aid this week. I love Kool-Aid. I made some grape Kool-Aid this week. I like... But my go-to Kool-Aids, they got to be grape, black cherry, lime, the pink lemonade, the orange, and like the blue, the standard flavors.
Orange is such an awesome flavor. I used to work at a Dairy Queen way back in the day, and we had a Mr. Misty machine. And I remember we had the standard flavors, and somebody's like, hey, when we were doing like inventory and cleaning, like, hey, I found a box of orange. I'm like, orange? Oh my God. And the orange was like 12 years old and long expired. And we're like, we're totally making orange. And we did. And we're like, we probably shouldn't serve this to anybody. So we didn't, but we totally made orange for us. And we had orange that was expired, and I was like, what's the worst that happens with this expired, you know, Mr. Misty mix? Like,
turn all pale and go into convulsions.
That's the start of Outbreak 2. I'm the Outbreak monkey. I just go smashing through the drive-thru window.
So the Mr. Misty, was that like the juice you see in like those round glass, like gumball looking machine things?
So Mr. Misty was like their like slushy. It was like the slushy mix.
Oh, it was a slushy. Okay. Yeah. So it wasn't like an orange drink or a Kool-Aid. It was a slushy. Yeah, okay.
It was a slushy. And we didn't do much of them because you're going to Dairy Queen, you're getting ice cream. You're not getting a slushy.
Oh, of course. Of course.
Yeah. So we rarely made it, but we're like, yeah, we're totally making the orange here.
Your boss comes in and you're just, you and your coworker just like convulsing on the ground. And then there's a customer. I said I wanted a cone dipped in chocolate. you're like speaking in tongues and your eyes go crossed. You're foaming at the mouth as after you drink this Kool-Aid or this Mr. Misty, whatever it was.
So this Dairy Queen I worked at, the owner, he didn't even want to own a Dairy Queen. His mom bought him a Dairy Queen as a graduation present for graduating college.
What?
And because she owned a Dairy Queen, so she bought him a franchise. And he had no interest. He just wanted to go out and party. So he was never there. Like, I was like 17 at the time, and he's like, you're the manager. And he gave me a key to the store, and I closed it down every night. And I was like,
so you could have been putting your mouth under the ice cream machine and like funneling the ice cream in your mouth. He probably wouldn't care.
No, he didn't. I literally, during the Super Bowl, I was like, you know what? I want some ice cream for the Super Bowl. So I went in after we closed, and I brought my mom's mixing bowl, like the big mixing bowl, and I made a sundae out of the mixing bowl, like mixing bowl size sundae. And I locked the door as I left and turned on the alarm, and I went back home and I ate the giantest sundae ever.
I just picture you in the bowl. It's like a towering sundae. You're just trying to carry.
And there was no supervision. Like, my best friend in high school worked there too for a hot minute, and somebody had their hands full and they were working the drive-through, and she's like, can you push the drive-through button so I can ask the people to hold on? And he's like, sure. And instead he just grabbed the headset from her and went, press the button, and yelled, help, help, we're being attacked by aliens in here. We had somebody broke a tooth out because we were throwing whole Oreos. Like, you know how like people like toss like candy and you try to catch it in your mouth?
Yeah.
We were doing it with whole Oreos across the entire store, and it knocked somebody's tooth out.
Oh my goodness.
It was just mayhem there, and there was no adult supervision.
Is this all. Dairy Queen still around?
No, it is now a Mexican restaurant.
Where was it located?
It was located on 111th Street in Worth, Illinois.
Worth, Illinois?
Yes.
I never even heard of it.
You may have seen the water tower along 294 where it says the Friendly Village.
Huh. So that's Worth, Illinois.
Uh-huh. So yeah, it was a Dairy Queen.
And you said it was 100th?
111th.
111th.
Yes. It was between like Ridgeland and Harlem on 111th Street. So it's like roughly 111th and Oak Park Avenue. And I remember once my friend, like, he's like, hey, we're taking the garbage out. And somebody climbed into the giant plastic garbage can. And we're like, and it had rained a little bit earlier. So the asphalt was slick. And they were like, somebody got the good idea of getting their car and hitting lightly tapping the garbage can with somebody in it to send them flying. And somebody got hit too hard and the thing tumbled over on the side. It started rolling and rolled into 111th Street, which is like two lanes each direction. So it's a busy street, and rolled right into the street and nearly got killed. And I was like, we really need adult supervision at this place.
Dear God, man.
I mean, when it's nothing but like 15, 16, 17, 18 year old kids working with no adults, like, of course, dumb stuff happens.
So you said it's on 111th, and you said, was it by Oak Park Avenue?
Yeah, ish. It was like a little bit west of that, but not as far as Harlem.
Not as far as Harlem. Was it past 294?
No.
Okay. I'm just looking at the map. I'm just curious to see where this Dairy Queen was.
Yeah. Mexican. I could probably give you the address in a second.
Do you know if the building is still there? Did they convert the building, or is it
No, they just made it a Mexican restaurant.
Okay.
It is Mm-hmm. It is now Del Carmen Mexican Restaurant at 6922 West 111th Street in Worth, Illinois.
Del Carmen Mexican Restaurant. Here we go. Okay, yeah, here it is.
That was the site of nonsense.
That was the site of you being zombified by 12-year-old slushy.
And one time we had, do you remember that movie Hoop Dreams?
Mm-hmm.
One of the main guys from that movie, his dad walked in. Not him, his dad. And his dad's like, walked in and just announced that he was that guy's dad and was just handing out 8x10s that were pre-autographed by him.
Dah!
And I took 3 and I don't know why, but I don't know. He didn't try to get free ice cream or anything. So I can't figure out what the thing, the, you know, the purpose was. But
this Mexican restaurant has video slots and the people on the poster in this Google Maps image are blurred out. So it looks a lot like raunchier than it actually is.
But that was my Dairy Queen.
Damn. The Sean Hotman Dairy Queen. You should buy that and just reopen it as a Dairy Queen. Oh, that's right by Palos Hills and Palos Heights.
Yep.
Okay. Yeah, that's not far from where my mom grew up. She grew up in the Oak Lawn area.
Yep, that's where I grew up. The crazy Dairy Queen.
I feel like that's got to be on our show. That's just got to be the next destination for our fans and listeners out there. Visit this Mexican restaurant that used to be the Dairy Queen that Sean Hotman and his friends had a bunch of shenanigans at. Weren't we talking about Bears Camp? We went on a 15-minute tangent about Dairy Queen. How do we even get on that?
I don't even know. But
just, oh, it was the Kool-Aid. It was you drinking the Kool-Aid. Oh, that's right.
But I do remember the guy's name who owned the Dairy Queen. His name was Jim McDade.
Do you still have contact
with McDade? When they closed down the Dairy Queen, I remember. So the health department came and asterisk here is they just came for the routine inspection.
Okay.
And he didn't show up and the lady was pissed. So she rescheduled it and he didn't show up again. And she's like, I remember my friend Chris and I were the ones that were in charge. And we were like 16 or 17. And she's like, I'm not mad at you boys. She's like, everything looks fine. She's like, but she's like, your boss is an asshole. And she hammered us. Like the paper towels were on like his metal rack and it had to be per town code, like 4 inches above the ground, but it was only like 3.5 inches. So it was like stuff like that. Like we had just finished washing dishes. And nobody had drained the water yet. She's like standing water in the facility. And it was just like dinging us for like every minor infraction. And she kept doing it until like he had to appear before like the city or face being shut down. And like the head of Dairy Queen had to come on his behalf. And then the head of Dairy Queen,
a helicopter.
Took me out to lunch when they finally were like, you know what, they're just gonna close down because the city was hated him so much, and they were like, all right, we're just gonna close this down and call it a day. And he took me out to lunch at this Greek restaurant that's no longer there. And he was like, you know, he's like, we value you here and we want to give you a job at any Dairy Queen that you would want to work at. And I'm just like, I don't want to work at Dairy Queen. I'm only here because I have no other options. Like,
damn it. I thought the Dairy Queen was going to be like Queen Elizabeth, but her crown is like Dairy Queen on it. Like, it would be a literal Dairy Queen was the head of Dairy Queen. My royal subject, I shall bless you with a job of your choosing.
It was a lady with a cow costume that her just face sticks out and has like fake udders, and she's got a crown. her scepter shoots milk out of it.
We were talking about the bears, and now we're on this. Oh man, that's wonderful.
All right, so the Bears began training camp, and sure, they're not in pads yet, and it's just like a passing drills, pretty much. But Jaquan Brisker and Kyler Gordon look good.
Yeah, and I think we could speak for all Bears fans that we were very relieved when Jaquan Brisker signed. And I mean, I still think Jaquan Brisker is going to be the prize of this year's draft. I mean, there's a lot to like about Brisker. And it gives you hope for the secondary. Like, if I think that there's anything you can take away so far from this training camp, is that we've seen a lot of good things from the secondary, particularly our new draft picks.
Yeah, I'm very happy with the first two draft picks. And if both of these guys pan out, like it's looking like they're going to be panning out, I mean, the raving that people are saying about Kyler Gordon, the instincts, the athleticism, and they're talking about how he's already picked up so much from tape and study and learning the playbook. And Jaquan Brisker just looks like a playmaker. And if Jaquan Brisker is the guy we think he is, I think that's going to make Eddie Jackson look like the Eddie Jackson under, the 2018 team.
And this is shaping up, you know, again, it's so early, and I know we don't want to draw too many conclusions here, but, you know, it's kind of shaping up to be what we expected from a Matt Eberflus team. Look what we saw in Indy. I mean, you don't sack the quarterback a lot with a defense with him, you know, really want to do it with secondary, and secondary's been their defensive point of emphasis this offseason. You know, we saw pass rushers go. You drafted a pass rusher, but, you know, you just drafted one guy. Robert Quinn's here for the time being. You know, he's probably going to be your sack leader this year. But, you know, sacks aren't going to be nearly as big as they were in the last era as a defense. This is going to be a much more secondary-oriented defense.
Right. And looking at this defense, like the secondary looks like it could be very solid. If the starting defense, barring injuries, looks like it could be a problem for opposing offenses. Because Robert Quinn, I don't think we're going to see the same type of numbers that he put up last year, but he's an excellent pass rusher. And I think we will see double-digit sacks from him. Travis Gibson, I think we will see close to double-digit sacks. And I'm hearing good things about Justin Jones. And I think Kyrus Tonga is going to be nice as the tackle next to him. And Roquan Smith, we know he's awesome once we can get him on the field and get him a contract extension, which we'll talk about in a second. But if everybody stays healthy, this defense will probably be pretty darn good. My concern right now has shifted to look at the linebacking depth if Roquan Smith goes down. It is not good.
No, it's not. It's really, really not. And I think looking at this defense as a whole, I've said this on this show before, is that you can see some of the strengths come together, especially if the secondary keeps doing what it's doing. I mean, what I like, you know, you can look at the plays they make on paper. You know, that's what you know, getting interceptions, breaking up passes, you know, you can look at all that stuff. But what you really like to hear is the instincts. Because if the instincts are good and you're a smart, secondary player, then that means you are going to be easier to coach and create a defensive scheme. And as I've said before, we've known how Eberflus defensive schemes work. I think that there's a lot to be optimistic about that, you know, especially considering you have to play some of the best quarterbacks in the game and it's a passer's game. My big concern, as I've said on the show before, is I think they are going to have trouble stopping the run. And when you have trouble stopping the run, that means that teams can control the clock against you. That is my biggest concern.
That's a valid concern. But I look at the defensive line and the linebacking core, and I see very thin depth. And if starters go down, this could be problematic. Like the starting defensive line and the starting linebackers, I think, can hold their own against the run. And, you know, we saw how they did that moons ago when we had Lance Briggs and Roquan Smith. We know now is going to play that like Lance Briggs position, and it's going to be him cleaning up the run plays. And as long as we have health in that, the front seven, I think we'll do a good job, but the depth is so razor thin in the front seven that any sort of disruption to the continuity there or injury is going to cause real problems.
And listen, we know for a fact that it is really hard to expect teams to stay healthy throughout an entire season. There's going to be injuries.
Right.
And when you don't have the depth, you're accounting for that. I mean, you know that seasons like 2018, where virtually everyone was healthy throughout, that's a lot to ask for.
It really is. And, but you know, I think if we get any injuries in that front seven, you're going to see teams be able to run on the Bears, like when Akeem Hicks was out these last couple of years, and that's going to spell problems.
Absolutely. And I think that this is going to be where we really see how well Ryan Poles works, because part of the job is, when you have injuries, is finding guys to plug in. And it's also going to be a test for the coaching staff too, because what do successful teams do? They find guys that aren't big names and they're able to plug them in and make things work respectively. That's going to be a big test, I think, for Poles and the coaching staff going forward.
But, you know, my concern is here is we're in a rebuild, but NFL rebuilds are generally very quick.
Yeah. We're not talking baseball or NHL.
But the problem is we literally just started this rebuild, and I feel actually fairly decent about the starting unit, both sides, not to be contenders or anything, but to be a competitive football team. It's just that depth is not there. And that's fair is, you know, when you tear it down, it's to get starters and depth pieces in there in 1 year is a big ask. You know, the defensive line and the linebackers, I think you've got a lot of linebackers. There's just a lot of question marks, and maybe people do step up. Who knows? Maybe they step up and they look good. The defensive line, it's a lot of names we know, and it's a little bit scary there. But there's a lot of question marks because they're all new guys to us, or there's a lot of new names. And there's a lot of unknowns when you bring in new people. So that defense, I think, with the style of play, the emphasis on turnovers and swarming to the ball and gang tackling and peanut punching, I think you're going to see good things from try hard good system. And I think the talent is the starting talent is enough to be a defense that's ranked around 10 to 12. I think that's fair. But if guys go down, it's going to be tough to maintain that.
Yeah, no, I agree. I absolutely agree. And, you know, I get it. Trading Robert Quinn doesn't seem like a bad idea. He's older. He's making a lot of money. He's not going to sustain what he did last year. Get what you can for him. But you know what? I'm also not going to really complain that he's here either, because I think he might be able to offer something to some of these young players that it might be valuable just having that kind of guy around some of these future pieces. So I'm not going to really complain about that too much. But, you know, I think right now what I'm more looking at is the offense, because there are a lot of questions right now. One being, there's a lot of rumors surrounding Tevin Jenkins. A lot of them.
Yes. And that's why I'm anxious for pads to go on, because some of them can just clear themselves right up when pads go on. But I think the damning one is David Kaplan saying that, you know, essentially he's out of favor and he's immature. And he's already, you know, in hot water with the offensive line coach.
Yeah. And I sometimes take what Cap says with a grain of salt, but if that's true, then that's obviously a problem.
Right. And I'm hearing other rumors that because there's no COVID list right now in the NFL, that it might be COVID related. And that's why he's not
right
there.
Right. I've heard a lot of that he's sick.
And so that's what I'm hoping for is, all right, because the guy clearly, you know, when Ryan Poles came in, he talked about wanting offensive linemen to be more athletic and slim down. And he did. He lost weight. He slimmed down. You know, there was never questions about his athleticism. And we know he's a strong guy and we know the technique is good. So you're like, okay, where is there a problem? And I guess if there is immaturity, but we didn't hear about that last year.
So no, we never heard about that last year.
It's suddenly just randomly creeped up. Like I'm a little skeptical. And like you said, is when David Kaplan says something, it might as well have been Twitter user at Pixie Dust 69 star smoke weed saying it, because it might as well just be a random person, because I don't take any, you know, credence in it, what he says. But the fact that he's not there is a little worrisome, especially when we already have Lucas Patrick go down with a broken thumb.
Right, exactly. You know, you're already kind of thin there.
Like, if Lucas Patrick's healthy, you're like, okay, Tevin Jenkins is competing for spots, because we brought in Riley Reiff, who, is he good? No. Is he bad? No. He is just a average professional NFL tackle. And then you brought in Michael Schofield, who is a veteran average guard. But they're veterans. You know what you're going to expect. Like there's not going to be surprises.
Right. Right.
And you're like, okay, then Cody Whitehair, he's a known commodity. Lucas Patrick is a guy you were very high on. And then it would be these two second-year players and a rookie competing for the right tackle spot. And you're like, okay, competition there. And suddenly Tevin Jenkins is not there. And it looks like Larry Borum is just holding it down in that right tackle spot, which was my expectation all along. I figured he would win one of those jobs. I thought he did a good job last year. So now on the offensive line with Lucas Patrick going out, looks a lot different, and broken thumb. best case scenario is 6 weeks, and that mean it would put him as the next time, or, you know, putting him back for week one. But this is like a,
you're missing a whole preseason.
You're missing the whole preseason. And this is a 6 to 8 week recovery. And the fact that it's on his snapping hand is the worrisome part.
Right.
If it was his non-snapping hand, I would be not worried at all. Like, they'll club that up and he'll be fine. He'll be playing. But the fact that it's on his snapping hand, and, you know, it's the center reps are going between Doug Kramer and Sam Mustafa. You have a second year quarterback in a brand new system. You want him to get all of the reps with the guy that's going to be snapping him the ball. And that's a little worrisome. I'm going to say a name that is JC Treader is out there. Seems like Cleveland is not going to bring him back. He's a free agent. That guy could step right in and easily be the starting center. And when Lucas Patrick comes back, then you can either ease his way back in to back to center, or you could put him at guard if Schofield or Whitehair are struggling. If you know that, the fact that you have your the potential centerpiece of your offense, your quarterback, and you're going to throw him out there with Doug Kramer as your center. Yeah, it's a little worrisome. So I don't know. You've got the cap room to spend. And JC Treader needs a job. I would at least give him a call before the Tampa Bay signs him, because I think they lost their center for the season. Right?
Yeah, bring some guys in. Use what you have left to bring some guys in. Bring them in on 1 year deals, and if they don't work, you cut them. You know, that's what I keep trying to say, is bring in a little more depth if you can.
Yeah, I mean, we saw they brought in Riley Reiff. They brought in Michael Schofield. And you're like, okay, I feel a lot more confident about this offensive line. And, you know, they have a lot of young guys. And maybe they pan out. Who knows? It's just, we don't know. And relying on a bunch of later round pick young guys to anchor your offensive line for a brand new system with a young quarterback, scary.
Yeah, it is.
It's one thing when you have a veteran, because that veteran, he's the one that's going to recognize the blitzers and the pass rush, and he's going to help call these things out, and he's helping the offensive line. It's why when you see like rookies step in for Green Bay, they have a better time, because that they don't have to worry about, you don't have to worry about the quarterback being overwhelmed. He knows what's going to happen. You've got a second year quarterback who is in a brand new system. Give him all the help he needs. So that's my big concern on offense.
Yep.
I had reservations about the wide receiver core, but they're lessening. They're lessening right now. Is Velus Jones Jr. looks good. I honest to God thought he was going to be, at least his rookie year, a package guy, that there was going to be the Velus Jones package, where, I mean, that's how Matt Nagy would have done it. It would have been, he would have gone in and he would have been the guy to catch the ball in a bubble screen and run, or an end around, or, you know, a wildcat or something. Those would be the gimmick type plays. And that's not what they're doing. They're lining him up on the outside, and he's looking good. And when you put him and Darnell Mooney on the same field at the same time, that's a whole lot of speed that you've got to account for if you're the opposing defense.
Yeah. And you know, I haven't been high on the Bears wide receiving core. In fact, quite critical of it, but I don't understand why people are still harping on the whole age thing with him. I just I don't get it. It seems one thing that's nitpicky that just doesn't make any sort of sense to me. And like you said, the speed is really impressive, and it'll be nice, even though the Bears don't have, in my opinion, still a true number one, a guy that can beat anybody one-on-one, the guy where you throw to and you're like, I just trust them to catch it. No matter who's covering him, no matter what the scheme against him looks like, I expect to throw to him and I expect him to catch it. But at least you have some barn burners here that you can use.
I think the fact that they do have barn burners mitigates some of the not having a true number one.
Well, what's nice is that you could kind of mix things up a little bit in terms of play calling and use that in different ways.
Because what are the odds that you have corners that can stay with a guy that fast? You're going to find that weakness. Like I said, Byron Pringle, I think he is going to be a guy that's a known commodity for the GM. He's going to come in here with upside and he's going to be a fine guy, just fine. But it's a guy that he's come from a high powered offense and with a high powered quarterback, and you're going to see him make some plays that he didn't have the opportunity with because of the star-studded offense that they had, but he's going to be fine. Darnell Mooney is going to put up, I think, better numbers than last year. Velus Jones, I think, is going to open a lot of people's eyes, but I don't expect eye-popping numbers as a whole. I think you're going to see Cole Kmet with a lot of numbers. And
Cole Kmet, it could be that breakout guy this year is what I'm hoping.
I was talking with somebody on Twitter and I was like, honestly, he was predicting numbers for Cole Kmet. And I was like, honestly, if he put up the same numbers he did last year, you just add 4 to 5 touchdowns, I would be perfectly happy with those numbers this year. His numbers weren't bad. It was just that he didn't catch touchdowns. And part of that was the offense and Matt Nagy. That's not who they went to in the end zone.
I'd like to see him out-muscle people a bit more, because you've seen tight ends be able to just out-muscle their defenders and be able to either create a few extra yards or create a little more separation. And he didn't do that enough last year, I felt. And again, part of that, like you just alluded to, you could put that on scheme. So you hope that a better scheme can kind of bring a bit more out of him.
And honestly, did you see how he showed up to mini camps and training camp? Like, he looks like just stacked. Like, clearly he knew he needed to out-muscle people and took it to heart, because he came in looking big. And so I'm hoping between Darnell Mooney taking that next step and Cole Kmet, and the fact that I think they're really going to be a run focused team, that we're going to see good things. And honestly, I'm seeing a lot of good things from Justin Fields. I think this system is a lot more conducive to his skills.
Well, we're already seeing how the way they're using him is that they're using him at his strengths, something Matt Nagy wouldn't do.
And I know you are not high on the Bears this year.
No,
I'm much higher than you. But I'm being realistic, as I expect them to be a 6 to 8 win team, which those aren't high expectations.
If they won 8 games, I would be more than happy with that. With this roster, if this roster somehow won you 8 games, I would be thrilled.
But I'm going to pose a question to you. How would your expectations of this year's Bears change if Marty McFly came from the future and told you that that Justin Fields is going to be the greatest Bears quarterback in history when he retires?
I would have said, gee, Marty, that doesn't take a lot.
I know it doesn't take a lot. Does that change your thinking at all?
I mean, yeah. I mean, here's the thing. Like, even if the Bears win like 5-6 games, but Justin Fields legitimately looks really good, then that's kind of a win right there, you would think. I mean, there's a huge difference is if you win 6 games with Justin Fields looking like at a Pro Bowl level, or if you win 6 games by luck and Justin Fields in the offense just looks completely lost and struggles.
Yeah, my thing is a similar point is if the Bears lose this year and they lose because of certain positions are not good enough, and they're the positions that we went in all knowing weren't good enough, I'm okay with it, because if we all know that it's not, they weren't good enough, then you know that Ryan Poles knows they're not good enough, and we're going to be attacking those next year when we have the full draft picks and $100 million to spend. So if, you know, teams are able to run on the Bears because injuries on the front seven, and you're like, okay, you know what? We knew there was no depth there. We did the best we could. If the offensive line struggles, okay. You know what? A lot of these guys were stopgaps and young players trying to get experience. If we need to upgrade the wide receiver core, you're like, you know, we tried to upgrade the wide receiver core as within the confines of what we could do, knowing we were not going to go out there and trade, you know, a first and a second and give $25 million a year to a number one wide receiver. Like, okay, I can deal with that because we can easily address that, because that means they're probably bad and we're going to get a top 10, 15 pick. And you're like, okay, we could get a guy in that range that's going to be stud defensive lineman, stud linebacker, or a stud wide receiver. That's that range. And we have all the money to spend to fill those gaps. I'm okay with it. It's mm-hmm. I'm not okay with it if Justin Fields struggles, and that's why,
right?
Or if the defensive backs that we drafted don't look good and Eddie Jackson regresses again, you know, those are the things that I'm just like, I can't, I'm not okay with losing for those reasons.
Right. Exactly. It's all about the context.
Yeah. Or the system, the offensive system stinks and doesn't work. And we go to gimmick plays after that because we realize the system's not working. Those are reasons I can't accept losing. If it's, hey, listen, that we're not able to stop the run. All right. We can fix that. You know, we need to add a number one receiver. We can fix that. Just as long as Justin Fields progresses and this offensive scheme looks like it's going to be a real offensive scheme and the defense can at least put up a fighting chance to keep the offense in the game, I can live with losing. You know, if our losses are all close games, we're all losing by single digits, all the losses, I can live with that. I just can't live with going out there and seeing three and outs after three and out after three and out, and, you know, only being able to score 16 points in a game and that being a struggle, and Matt Nagy's stupid press conferences and his archaic high school offense.
Word salad.
I don't want to hear about the whys.
Hey, if there's one kind of meatball take I have, did you hear about how Eberflus was getting into Jackson's face for not completing what he was supposed to do on the field? Mm-hmm. Like, I know, again, it's a very, oh yeah, get in his face, yeah, accountability. But after all the years of Matt Nagy, we've been dying to see some accountability.
Yeah, we've heard Jalon Johnson say, listen, I've gotten chewed out in film study, and he's like, if everybody has, and if they tell you they haven't, they're lying. You know, they're all learning real quick what the expectations are. And, you know, I like the approach Eberflus is bringing. It is a tough love, but there is love there, but there's expectations as well. And if you do what you're supposed to do, it's going to be a happy time. It's not going to be who's the old curmudgeon that coached the Giants and the Jaguars?
Coughlin.
It's not going to be that where, or a Belichick where it's just straight, you know, nothing but piss and vinegar.
Curmudgeon-y stuff.
Yeah. Like it's going to be, hey, these are the expectations. And if you meet them, love. If you don't meet them, you're in for a world of hurt. And
my friend, you're in a world of pain.
That's what I think this team needed. And I think that's what they're going to get. And I'm hoping it's going to work out.
Yep. Me too. And I think that these next few weeks at camp, I think that they will hopefully answer some more questions. It'd be nice to get an answer on Tevin Jenkins. That's mm-hmm. pretty important. You know, is there going to be any progression made with Roquan Smith? I mean, it's nice that he's there and working with the players, even if he's not actually on the field.
Give him a contract. Just it. And
there's so much room going forward to pay him.
And the hard part I have is he doesn't have an agent. He's representing himself.
Right. Right.
And these negotiations, from what I hear, get a little ugly. And sometimes players just don't want to hear the things that are said in these negotiations. And so my hope is that they just throw him a fair number and he goes, okay, I'm good. And it doesn't have to get into the bitter negotiations.
Right. That's right. Exactly. Because when you don't have that agent, you don't have anybody telling you, hey, you should look at it this way. Hey, you should look at it that way. Let's try this approach. It's just emotion versus your employer, basically.
Right. You know, it's like if the team, their negotiation tactic is, listen, is there's severe weakness here. He's not as good as this player that got this much money. So we're not going to pay him that much money. And players don't want to hear that they're not as good as somebody else, or there's this fatal flaw that makes them not worth that much money. That's what the agent does. They're the, you know, the impartial, like I represent you. I have no emotion in this. And
unless you're Scott Boras.
And even then, like he's going in there. He's fighting for his clients and he's doing well, but he's not taking it personally.
Oh no, of course not.
But if you're like, so that's what they do. And, you know, I'm just hoping that as representing himself, he just goes, hey, listen, this is a fair offer. You know, let's offer him $18 million a year, 5-year extension. Boom, done. He's happy. He gets his money and he shows up to camp. I'm hoping that happens very soon.
Absolutely, because he is arguably your best player in terms of what he's done, in terms of his skill level. Obviously, you want Justin Fields to be your best player, but, you know, he's still got some to prove. Right. He's at least one of your top three players.
Yeah. And the Tevin Jenkins thing, I hope that resolves soon, because I think he could be important with Lucas Patrick being out. Because if Tevin Jenkins is, if you can plug him in at that guard and then kick Cody Whitehair in at center, I mean, I didn't love Cody Whitehair at center. I think he's better at guard, but he did play a lot of time with the Bears at center. And then you would suddenly be Riley Reiff, Tevin Jenkins, Cody Whitehair, Michael Schofield, Larry Borum as your offensive line. I like that better than Sam Mustipher or Doug Kramer being your center.
I agree, but don't say that on Olin Krutz or Earl Strangley.
He might.
What you talking about, man? He start, you know, puts his around you.
Oh, I'm just gonna have to hire Fred Miller to be my bodyguard.
Yeah.
The last thing I wanted to talk about the Bears is I don't know if you saw the city of Chicago's renovation options for Soldier Field.
Oh my God.
I think this was a too little too late.
Boo is what I say to those.
Is here's the problem where it started is people are like, well, the city messed up Soldier Field. You know where the city messed up with Soldier Field was? They let Sweaty Teddy head up the renovation, and he fucked that up. That was on Sweaty Teddy, and it was a disaster from the get-go. Did anybody at any point, I can tell you this, as when they did that renovation, the only good thing that came of it is they rerouted Lakeshore Drive to be on the other side of Soldier Field. And other than that, it was just a complete disaster.
Yep.
That was never like, oh man, I'm excited. This looks great. Everybody was like, that looks stupid.
It's a spaceship in a toilet bowl.
My fear here is, how are the Bears going to pay for a brand new stadium?
I think there's going to be some public funding in there. I think you're going to get some investing. I don't think there will be. You don't think so?
I think there will be $0 of like Arlington Heights is not going to pony up money.
I'm not even saying Arlington Heights. I think they're going to, and maybe it's not even public funding, but I think they're going to find ways to, you know, I don't really know how the business works, but I mean, if you take out loans and you, you know, do stuff like that, get investors involved. Can they get involved? You know,
I believe I read the NFL will kick in $500 million.
Yeah.
But that's going to leave them with another $1 to $1.5 billion of money they're going to have to come up with on top of they had to buy the land.
It's going to be George McCaskey on the corner of a street. Ice cream. Good ice cream. He's got like a bell and like a little cart. Come get some good ice cream.
Mom will fire me. He's just got a cardboard sign. Mom will fire me from my job if you don't give me some change. I still think that this is some sort of negotiation tactic, because by the time, I mean, we are just a couple of short months away from Virginia McCaskey turning 100 years old.
Isn't that crazy?
January, she will turn 100 years old. I truly think this organization, once she dies, will go up for sale. And there's never been a plan to actually build the stadium. It is a buy the land, get the architects to build make the plans and get the ball rolling, but never actually pay for it. Sell the team with that, all this ready to go.
It could be their sales.
Cause otherwise I don't know how they pay for it.
Good ice cream.
Unless it's, they will sell a portion of the team, cause they currently own, I think, 80%. The McCaskey family. If they want to sell another 20%, are they still the majority ownership?
Could you imagine if they sold 20% to Tom Ricketts?
I would be so pissed.
could you imagine? Imagine George and Tom on the sidelines in their orange Bears polos, just yucking it up.
But the problem is with the city's concept is that they need a bigger plot of land, and because Soldier Field is a historic landmark, you are stuck with the skeleton of it. And now
it's just not big enough.
If I think there are things you could do. But it would involve having to tear down the stadium completely and utilize some of the land that's there and build a brand new stadium. That's just not feasible.
The location just is not ideal. I mean, the thing that gets me about the whole dome proposal is that they're completely missing the point of all of this. Would a retractable roof or dome be nice? Yes, but that is not that is one of the things we're least worried about here. We're talking about issues with location, parking, size, and just owning your own stadium.
Right.
Those are all the issues, but they're like, oh, we'll fix all that with a dome. That's the least of the worries.
And, you know, if you're the Bears and you plan to keep the team, like, ownership of the stadium doesn't really matter. Like, you're making money. Your investment was $100 to start this franchise. Like, it's, you're long paid off. Whereas, like, if you paid $5 billion, you need to own the stadium. You need to generate all that revenue to recoup your costs. Like, so that really doesn't matter. But, so, you know, staying in the city works. But if you're planning to sell at all, or, you know, really optimize your revenue, then yeah, you need to own your stadium. And Arlington Heights is a pain in the ass for people that live in the city. And honestly, from people that are coming from the South side, like, my biggest concern is getting there. The infrastructure around Arlington Racetrack is not ready for an NFL stadium. They're going to have to pump a lot of money into infrastructure. And right. Also, my other concern is people are like, oh, well, there's a train station there. But where does that train station come from and go to? It's not a central hub location. You can't go from Joliet to Arlington Heights on the train unless you go all the way downtown, catch another train, and then go all the way up. Whereas if you go into the city, you go into Union Station, every direction that train comes from, and then you just have to get there from the train. But that's my concern, is who cares if there's a train station right there? It's where does that train, what train line does that come from, and where does it go? Like, for me, I've got to go all the way downtown to catch the train to go all the way back up. That sucks. People coming from Indiana or the South Side or, you know, Naperville area, like, there's no train for them.
We were talking about this, some of my coworkers and I, and having a train from the city to Arlington Heights, because there is a Metra that go out there, and Metra is not owned by the city of Chicago. And I thought of an idea and said, what if they made the Bears Express and it was just the train meant for taking fans to and from the stadium? And then I thought even further. I said, if we're going to have the Bears Express, why not have George McCaskey be the engineer? And then I thought, if it's going to be that case, you might as well have it just be a big old steam engine, like an old time steam engine, just vroom, 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 vroom. You have this massive steam engine train that's painted navy blue and orange, and you got George McCaskey with the big engineer hat and the gloves going vroom, vroom, all aboard.
Yeah. So here's my concern is, you know, and like, listen, I want a state of the art stadium. I want that awesome, you know, like what Dallas has, what the 49ers have, what
Minnesota has.
What they have in Los Angeles, like, that's what I want. Like, something amazing. If that has to be in Arlington Heights, fine. But I just get annoyed when fans are like, well, there's a Metra station there. Here's where the Metra station goes. Harvard, Woodstock, Crystal Lake, Barrington, Palatine, Arlington Heights, Des Plaines, Park Ridge, and then into the city. So if you're coming from Highland Park or the North Shore, there's no train line that goes there. if you are coming from the western suburbs like Naperville, Batavia, Aurora, St. Charles, you have to drive. There's no train line. If you're coming from the south, Tinley Park, Frankfort, New Lenox, Joliet, there is no train line. If you're coming from Indiana, you're going to have to take the Indiana train to Chicago, then the Chicago train in. So that train line that you're hyping as a selling point is not really that big of a selling point. Like, who takes the train now to the racetrack? So you have to drive, and they're going to, that, like, if you've ever driven there around race time, which doesn't have a fraction of the people that an NFL game is going to have, you are going to need to rebuild those roads and completely add infrastructure and better interchange on the expressways right there.
Yeah, there's going to be work to be done. There's no doubt about it.
A lot of work to be done.
But if you have the Bears McCaskey Express, it's a magical ride that you don't have to worry about. Platform 1920.
Platform 1920 and three quarters.
Hey, that makes sense. 3-4. Walter Payton, 34. See?
Oh, man.
It all makes sense. You're going to have Ed Obradovich as Mr. Conductor. Damn it, when I blow the whistle, that means all aboard. Just imagine, like, Ed Obradovich and, like, Dan Hampton, like, dressed as, like, conductors, just looking like they absolutely hate their lives.
I should get on the goddamn train.
It starts going, oh, shit. He's running to try to catch up to it.
Oh, my God.
George the Engineer. He's shoveling coal.
He's like, my arms aren't strong enough to hold this coal. He's picking up one piece of coal at a time and tossing it in like a 6-year-old throwing a rock into the water. Look, mommy, I threw a coal into the fire.
I can't do it with the shovel.
But I don't know. There's a lot. The Bears as a whole just need to be modernized. And I hope it is a sale. Like, It for a long time, it was cool to be owned by a family, but I don't care anymore. I just care about winning.
Exactly. There's no real nostalgic reason at this point when George Halas has been gone, what, 40 plus years now?
He's been gone a long time. And like his last remaining child is about to be triple digits.
Do you remember that rumor that she wasn't doing well? That was like months ago. And
I don't think that was a rumor. I think that was real. That health scare.
But she's pushing on, man.
I mean, has anybody seen her?
No, but you don't usually see her until what, week one when she's in her suite? Though it will be interesting, though, like if she's not there.
That will say a lot. That'll absolutely say a lot.
Because nothing stopped her. Like, for all these years, like, here's this 100-year-old lady still going all the games.
But I'm going to say this about Arlington Heights. If they're going to build this state-of-the-art stadium, if there's not a dome on that thing, I'm going to be pissed.
Oh, well, we didn't have enough, so we want to cover. We got this giant tarp.
We've got Bears ear flaps that you could put on your hat that'll keep you warm. It's way cheaper than a half a billion dollars to put a dome on.
Or the dome is like hydraulics that are like from like the early 20th century. They're powered by like steam, like the steam engine.
Virginia McCaskey will turn 100 on January 5th.
Less than a year.
I mean, we are getting August, September, October, November, December. Like, we're like 5 months away from her being 100.
Such a small percent of people live to be that old. I mean, she's literally like a non-evil Mr. Burns.
Yeah, I don't think she's a bad person. She just
not at all.
She just got lucky lottery and inherited the Bears. And she's like, I love this team. I don't know anything about it.
And honestly, like, has Virginia actually made any like crucial decisions for the team in years?
Yeah, she hired George.
Well,
but she's proud of this team and loves this team like a grandmother loves a grandson. And then you're like, you ask any sort of follow-up question about the grandson. Well, I know that he likes Batman when he was six, and but he's 35 now. Like, what does he do for a job? I don't know, but he's very important at his company. I'm very proud of him. He writes me a letter. Like, that's kind of what she is with this team. Like, all right, well, who's your quarterback? I don't know. He's that fella that we got that's a kid.
Yeah, you know, he reminds me of that Jim McMahon fella. But you know what? I do think, though, she is actually pretty sharp. Like, she seems like she's always been pretty sharp. So I wonder what's going to happen if, you know, if there are continued health scares with her, because like you said, if she's not at the games, it's going to be very telling.
I mean, this team will stay with her and as long as she's alive.
Exactly. Here.
There's no reason for her to sell. And she just has no interest in it. She's 99 and she's rich. Like, what can you do to make her want to sell this team? Like, once she dies, who knows what happens to this organization? I mean, is she worried that, oh, you know what? It's going to go out of the family. If I die, I'm leaving it to George. And then we're stuck with the team being McCaskey family as long as George is still alive. But George, men in the McCaskey family don't have a history of living a long time. And, you know, for whatever's that's worth. And George is not a spring chicken.
No, he's got to be in his 70s, right?
George McCaskey.
Or late 60s.
I'm saying late 60s.
He's actually 35, but all the years of stress and Bears awfulness has aged him terribly.
He is 76, I'm finding.
Wow. Wow, he's that old? I thought he was like late 60s, early 70s.
But of course, I'm going off a weird website. There's nobody, like, Wikipedia doesn't have his age. Here's another one that's estimating in between 65 and 75. I can't seem. Google's not being helpful here. Virginia, very helpful.
Yeah, and we know how old she is. It's publicized, you know, that she's almost going to be 100.
Yeah, I mean, okay, George McCaskey, let's just say he's old. And, his brother, how old was his brother when he died?
I honestly don't know.
Michael McCaskey.
Michael McCaskey's dead. I forgot about that.
Yeah, he died a couple of years ago.
That's right. I keep forgetting about that.
He was 76 when he died.
So he wasn't super young, but he wasn't super old.
Yeah.
I mean, just wondering about the ages of the McCaskies. It's just, like I've said before, you wonder, once Virginia, passes on, and I don't like to be grim. I don't really like.
It's not grim. I mean, it's a fact.
She's lived a century. I mean, God bless her for living a century.
Everyone is going to die, and to living to 100 is
unbelievable.
That doesn't happen very often.
No, it doesn't. And I mean, eventually something's going to change. And I have maintained the opinion that the main reason the McCaskies still own the Bears is because of her.
I mean, because the rumblings are that the other heirs just want to get rid of it.
Right. And it's clear they don't have interest.
Yeah. And it's George. It's George and Virginia. And Virginia is about to turn 100. This is not even being morbid. She's going to die in the not too distant future. Like, whether that be tomorrow or whether it be 2 years from now, she's probably going to be gone. And George, the McCaskey men have not lived that, much beyond too much more than his age. So he's older too. Like, so the younger generation, they don't want this team, and it's going to get sold. Like, they're going to sell it for $5 billion.
Yep.
The odds of less than 1% of the U.S. population will make it to age 100.
It's amazing that she's been able to do that and to stay so sharp.
Yeah.
Like, that's impressive.
Yeah, your chances of making it to 100 are pretty darn slim. Yeah. So, according to the U.S. Census Special Report on centenarians, it ended up being 1.73 people being 100 or older per every 10,000 people alive.
That's something. Speaking of older, I'm sure you heard that Bill Russell died today.
I did.
One of the best to ever do it. One of the most accomplished athletes ever. You know, that's a legend right there that is passed on.
Yeah. I mean, he was almost 90. It's not a surprise, but it was still, you don't expect a legend to go. And he was an absolute, legend. He's on the Mount Rushmore of NBA players. And, he's somebody that's going to be mourned by the league, not just.
Absolutely. This is the passing of a player that could very well see teams wear patches on their uniforms next year type passing.
Yes, absolutely. He is just, a king among men as far as NBA goes. There's not that many players that will be that impactful. Kobe's death was a lot of it because of just how young he was when it happened.
Just the shock.
Yes. But the magnitude of things, Bill Russell will be there. Magic Johnson, Michael Jordan.
Absolutely.
So this is just really big. I never got to see him play. He retired before I was born, but I've seen a lot of film of him, and just he was incredible.
Truly one of the all-time greats.
So rest in peace. And you know, just an incredibly good basketball player. 11 NBA titles.
Not bad. Not bad.
Not bad for a guy that played how many seasons? 13 seasons. He won 11 titles.
Could you imagine seeing a player like these days accomplish that feat? So rare.
Yeah. This will be the one time where people will consider that maybe Michael Jordan is not the greatest basketball player, but
let's not go there.
No, I'm just saying this is the one time where nobody's going to argue about it. You know, the news, like, arguably the best basketball player ever. Everyone's just going to be like, fair enough.
He's certainly the most accomplished.
Yeah, nobody's ever going to accomplish what he accomplished.
Winning 11 championships.
Yeah, that's just insane.
In any sport.
The only other thing I had to talk about, and that's quick, is with the Blackhawks' complete teardown and Patrick Kane and Jonathan Toews just not being happy, what are the odds that they're going to waive their no movement clauses?
I think it's much higher now.
Do you think that they're meeting with each other and like, hey, what are you thinking?
Because it's possible.
They've been so linked together for their entire career. It's tough to imagine them like one being like, no, I'm staying, and the other one going.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, I think it's possible, and we'll see what happens.
I mean, it's likely that Kyle Davidson probably wants them gone, because he's made it abundantly clear that anybody that they liked was gone. And
yeah,
you know, this is like the epitome of that Will Smith from the Fresh Prince meme where he's in the living room and there's nothing in there and he's just looking around. Like, that is Toews and Kane right now. And they're like, I don't know any of these players. Who the hell are these people?
Yeah. Hey, we got Max Domi now. Whoop-de-doo.
That would have been cool several years ago.
Yep.
Was there anything else you wanted to talk about?
Nope. I think I've said my piece.
All right. Well, that's going to do it for this episode of Bill Swirsky Sports Talk Chicago. I want to thank everybody for listening. Please hit subscribe however you listen to podcasts, whether it's iTunes, Stitcher, YouTube, Google Play, Spotify, etc. Share this podcast with your friends. It's how we grow the show. Follow us on social media at Swirsky Sports, facebook.com/Swirsky Sports, SwirskySports.com, or at ShyFanPat2 on Twitter, or AlexanderJPatCreative.com for all the cool stuff that Alex does. And again, thank you guys so much for listening. And until next time, bear down.
Comes Lynn. What a lucky break. The good Lord wants the Cubs to win.
We thank Ditka and God for all they have provided.
Cubs win. Cubs win. Cubs win.
Oh, I don't want her, you can have her. She's a Packer fan. She can't fit in my van.
And she looks like...
Remember, New Yorkers, smoking crack is not legal on the plains.
Bears, 31 to -7.
The Bears!
Oh, when the Bears go bearing down...